Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We haven't had Kathy DeBussy phone in yet, so we're going to play a tape from Dr. Austin Ratner, the psychoanalyst's aversion to proof.
Psychoanalyst's aversion to proof. It sounds like a very straightforward title. Is it as straightforward as it sounds?
Well, yeah, it's an academic, it's certainly an academic sounding title, and the book is intended for psychoanalysts, but also for the general public. It came out of a paper that I published last year that has generated some interest in the community of psychoanalysts. And I'm hoping to really make an impact on the field and help to bring it back into the mainstream with this book.
So now, is this your first book published then?
No, this is my third book. This is my first nonfiction book. And my first two books that I published were novels. I'm an MD. I trained as a physician now a frighteningly long time ago. And I switched careers and became a writer. So I've been working as a writer for the last couple decades.
Did, even while you were working as a writer, did you keep up your interest in medicine and especially, I guess, in terms of psychoanalysis?
Yes, I have continued to be interested in medicine. I write about science and medicine, both nonfiction and in my fiction. And I'm currently working on a book of short stories that is about physicians, both real historical figures and also just purely fictional ones, including a story about Sigmund Freud and another about Anna Freud, who are of course the father daughter team who kind of invented psychoanalysis at the turn of the last century.
So how did you come to be interested in psychoanalysis? Like, is this something you've always had an interest in, or is it something that sort of came about as you went through your medical career?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, psychoanalysis is the field that kind of invented talking psychotherapy. But it has kind of been pushed to the margins over the last 50 years or so. So many people are not actually directly as familiar with psychoanalysis as they once were. I had a familiarity with it growing up because my grandmother was a psychoanalyst. So it was in my family. But in addition to that, my personal life story kind of brought me to psychoanalysis. It was something that I shared with my grandmother, that we both lost a parent very early. My father died just before I turned 3 years old. And because psychoanalysis is a field that emphasizes the impact of early childhood on the rest of life, the psychoanalysts were really the ones who were able to help me as I became a teenager and began to struggle with depression and things. They were the ones that really were able to help me think about my depression in relation to my childhood and the loss of my father. And so it's been very, psychoanalysis is something I've benefited from personally as a patient. And then when I went to medical school, I saw how marginalized the field was, and it was dismaying to me because I had already seen firsthand how beneficial it could be, how unique it is in helping people who have had childhood loss. And I wanted to do something to help the field kind of get back on its feet, and that was the purpose of writing this book.
So I guess the one question I would have then right off the bat is, you say it's become marginalized. If Sigmund Freud were to come back today, would he even recognize where psychoanalysis is now?
Yeah, another really good question. And mostly, you know, if you were to say, if you were to bring a great scientist from the past back from the dead and have them look at the field that they sort of created, invariably the answer to that question is no, they wouldn't be able to recognize it. You know, even a living scientist, like let's take someone like Francis Crick, who was the co-discoverer of DNA in the 1950s. He's still alive, but look at where genetics has come since he discovered the structure of DNA. I mean, there are things going on now that Crick and Watson, who discovered the structure of DNA, would never have envisioned back then. And it's a younger science than psychoanalysis, which many people trace the origin of psychoanalysis back to about 1900, when Sigmund Freud published his seminal work, The Interpretation of Dreams. Freud would recognize where psychoanalysis is because it has changed so much less than a science like genetics. And one of the reasons that it's changed so much less is that the psychoanalysts as a community have been very resistant to change and very resistant to the usual kind of open scientific argumentation and testing of their theories that lead to the evolution of thinking in a field. Classical psychoanalysis remains very much the way that Freud left it. And in writing this book, I have tried to diagnose some of the problem of why the psychoanalysts have been so resistant to change and encouraging them to open their field to sort of the usual scientific methods so that they can move forward into the 21st century. That said, the field has splintered in a lot of directions that Freud would not have recognized. There are kind of a lot of spin-off movements of psychoanalysis and within psychoanalysis that Freud would find a totally alien and would probably regard as betrayals of his original ideas.
Now, would part of the problem with psychoanalysis to some extent as a science be that you can do experiments and stuff like that, but because you're dealing with mental things, it's very difficult to actually get what you could call cold, hard evidence, like most other sciences, as you say, genetics, mathematics, anything like that? You can put the numbers down and they're there and you can't argue with them. But psychoanalysis, I would think, you can always find somebody who's going to argue with anything you do.
Yeah, another great point. And there are certainly many people, many psychoanalysts who would agree with you, who would say that we're talking about the human mind, the human heart, the human soul even. This is something that's not susceptible to study in the same way that chemistry is. What I would say to that is that there is certainly a distinction between the kind of phenomena that Sigmund Freud was trying to describe and that psychoanalysis is looking at when we're talking about subjective emotional states, feelings, defense mechanisms, dreams, conflicts, worries. These types of things, you can't look at them under a microscope. That is true. But you can study them, and there are many different fields that study phenomena that can't be looked at under a microscope and that go about studying certain phenomena in a scientific way, even if the phenomena are not as concrete. Freud himself compared psychoanalysis to archaeology in that the thought process in both fields was reliant on taking clues, taking remnants of the past that you can't see the entire thing as it was. Let's say if you're digging down into the earth and looking, you know, at a fragment of pottery from 2,000 years ago and trying to learn something about the way of life of the people that used this vessel. There's a lot you can't know about it, but there are certain things that you can know, and you can reconstruct and make inferences based on what you do know. And I think that emotions, childhoods that are now long gone, but yet have remnants in people's minds as they're in their adult lives. These are things that we can't necessarily talk about them with the kind of mathematical precision that one would talk about, a molecule. But they are nonetheless phenomena that we can think about in an organized, empirical, scientific way. And I think that the psychoanalyst can do better at that, and need to, in order to serve the interests of people in need of mental health, and to serve the interests of children. I was just reading about the psychoanalyst that talked. I don't know if you remember the whole incident with Elian Gonzalez a long time ago, who was a child. There was a famous picture of him taken, of him in the arm, a little boy being held in the arms of a soldier who had taken him away from his parents. And it seems relevant right now with the separations of children from their parents at the United States-Mexico border at the moment. And this being done without regard to the best interests of the child. The psychoanalysts are a group that in the mental health sciences, more than any other group, have the best interests of the child in mind. And they need to up their game as a science and as a participant in public intellectual discourse in order to defend the interests of children. I think the psychoanalysts probably have stood up and said, this is wrong to separate young children from their parents. And maybe it doesn't require an expert to know that even. But this is the type of thing that the psychoanalysts, I feel like, their wisdom has an important real-world impact. And if they were to up their game as a science, they could be helping and defending a lot more vulnerable people.
Okay, Austin, we're going to have to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to you some more about psychoanalysts' aversion to proof on Health First.